So this is a series of, well, I like to think a series of the same topic that we're going to talk about. Mike, you're the first guest on this issue. We're hoping to get a few people from Migrant Workers Association to talk about the same issues. Not going to name names yet because I haven't actually asked them. So hopefully we can make this as a series. So today's topic is about migrant workers. Since the COVID pandemic, migrants in New Zealand has received a lot of backlash, almost hate, pretty much since coronavirus first started. Mike, you've worked over the last, I would say, 20, 30 years with migrants, and you've done a lot of work around it, including if anyone followed us last year, we advocated for 48 construction workers that came from China who was really screwed over by their boss. Now, with the pandemic, migrant workers is facing a whole different layers of issues, and we're here to have a chat about what it is and why this type of behavior needs to stop.
All right, so what the problem New Zealand has is that it has become dependent on the use of temporary migrant workers who are vulnerable because of their situation, largely because they are tied to particular employers or they have come here as students, and even if not tied to a particular employer as students, they are. Their desire is to progress towards permanent residence. Therefore, they are willing to put up with almost anything, any shit that they're given by the employers that they are with. Others are in categories like working holidays or special schemes from the Pacific for horticulture and so on. But the total now is something like 350,000 workers here on temporary visas, and at the moment they're stuck here.
So I think maybe we need to rewind back a little bit on the history of migrant workers. Because now, modern days, when we think of migrant workers, we think of people who look like me, yellow skin, dark hair. But in reality, migrant workers, it covers a wide range of workers. And in New Zealand, we've always had a history of migrants. Now, yeah,
Well,
it's been a
every I mean, on a certain level, everyone's a migrant. So, at least migrants to the Maori society that was established there 1,000 years ago. And so, a couple of hundred years ago, Europeans came to this part of the world and then started migrating here under British colonialism. And then after World War II in particular, there was a surge of migrants from the Pacific, and then in the 80s, there was a shift towards what they called a sort of a point system for qualifications in order to avoid what was essentially a sort of white European racist migration policy outside of the Pacific. Only white Europeans were allowed here. Preferably English speakers. Then, by the 1980s, that was no longer acceptable in the world, so they shifted towards a points system, and we had a surge of Asian migration. All of this in the sort of more permanent categories. But the big change was in the last decade or two was a shift towards the instead of allowing people in as permanent migrants, they shifted towards only allowing people in on temporary migrant visas, using the lure of being able to maybe transition to permanent residency. But there was a continuous increase in the number of people here on temporary visas who were having the goalpost shifted on them. So they were told they'd be able to transition to permanent residence, but then made harder and harder and harder after they got here. So now we've got this 350,000 people in a temporary category who are super exploited. This is not just because these are why you've got these appalling scandals associated with the exploitation of migrant workers, but this system was deliberate. They created it because they wanted to keep wages low, and the way to improve the situation is actually to transition the ones who are here to permanent residency, give everyone real equality, because I think that's the only humane solution to the crisis we now have.
So, even though I'm a migrant, but I have very little knowledge on how immigrations and all of that stuff work. Now, when I first came to New Zealand, it was a point system, but I was way too young to understand it. Can you explain a little bit on that? And do we still have a point system?
Yeah, basically, you get points for different categories. You get points for your educational qualification. You get points for your skill, your business skill or background. If you've got background in business, you get points for your English language ability. You get points for your age. You get points for
your age.
Younger. Younger is better, I think. You know, generally, it's just who. Now, on one level, it doesn't really matter because the government says that it will take whoever it wants, and there's almost no appeal. So you apply for, under their system, whatever the system exists at the time you apply, and the points that you're meant to be able to achieve, you know, you've got a sort of rough idea of the points you're meant to be able to achieve in order to get that, then you come to New Zealand, you get the degree, you come to New Zealand, you enroll at university, you get the degree you know they want, you get the job that you know that they want, you work for several years, but then the government can change those points on you overnight. And they've done that again and again and again. And just
recently they've
ranked it up that you've got to earn $100,000 or something in order to be able to transition under the current system, in order, because they significantly reduced the number of people they were transitioning to permanent residency. Normally it was, you see, New Zealand normally had around 30,000 people a year that had transitioned to permanent residency, because New Zealand lost around 30,000 people a year to Australia or the rest of the world. So even just to replace the people we were losing, we needed a steady inflow of permanent residents. And now the government has A, significantly reduced the number of people being transitioned to permanent residents, and so significantly increased the requirements in order to do so. The problem is we now have a significant layer of people who have been here for a decade or so on visas that they have had to renew each year, yes, they retain, so there's a category called essential skills, which if you can prove that no one else in your area can do that job, you can get a visa. And if after 1, 2, 3 years, however long the visa is, you can prove that you're still an essential worker, you can get a renewal. And if after 1, 2, whatever, you can prove that again, you can get a renewal. You can also, if you're an essential skill visa holder, you can bring your partner. You can have a child. So now we have people who have been here a decade or more, whose children have been born here, whose partners are with them, or have met new partners in New Zealand, and the children aren't able to access permanent residency. So we took that away from children born in New Zealand a few years ago. And the families isn't able to access permanent residency. Even though they lived here for a decade, their children have been born here, they have made New Zealand their home there. There is no real prospect without deep inhumanity being inflicted of deporting them back to a country often that they've lost contact with. So there is now a category of what I would call the usually resident in New Zealand who have made New Zealand their home, who must be allowed to stay. Now, the government, the previous government, did that for dairy farm workers. And I think it should be extended to other all workers who are normally resident in New Zealand, who have been renewing these essential skills visas again and again, whose kids have been born here, they must be granted permanent residence.
It's a bit demoralising when you have to go to, you know, immigrations or whoever it is you go to and get your visa renewed every few years. Now, getting my passport renewed is a hassle itself. Oh. Imagine getting your visa renewed.
It's not just that. It's just it's the extortionate fees they impose on people.
Oh,
it's
for
thousands
sure.
and thousands and thousands of dollars of fees every single time. And you have to go back and get another form. Go back and get another form. Pay another fee.
For
pay
sure.
another fee. It's just it's robbery. It's robbery. People these people are being used and abused, but now they are stuck here, right? The COVID crisis has created a situation where A, we can't bring in new temporary visa holders, right? We can't bring new people in. So we are stuck with these people who are already here, and we can't, in all humanity, deport them because we no longer want them. So we've actually got a good, I think we've got a good situation. So we've got a situation, yes, we've got 350,000 people here on temporary visas, but generally they had jobs. And even though many people are losing their jobs at the moment, over the next year or two, the government needs to make sure that everyone's got a job, including those who are here. We can do that. I am absolutely sure we can do that.
Why? You know, it makes logical sense for you and I to say that these people have been here, and we've seen workers and some of these big companies that's just laid off hundreds, even thousands of workers, who's been here for like 8, 9, 10 years. Why is it the government, why doesn't the government want to give them permanent residency?
I think it wants to keep people in a vulnerable position. See, this is capitalism, right? Capitalism wants to keep wages down. Capitalism wants to keep labor cheap. Because that makes them competitive. So the dairy industry is competitive in the world because it produces in the cheapest way possible. And before the current crisis, to pay New Zealanders to go and work on dairy farms in Southland would have required them paying twice the minimum wage. But instead, they can bring in Filipino dairy workers and pay them the minimum wage. They should be paying twice the minimum wage, if that's what the market demands. See, these capitalist farmers and these capitalist businesses, they say the market should decide everything, except when it comes to labour power, except when it comes to the price of labour. So now they're screaming out, they're saying they want their current workers to be given permanent residence. They want, and I think that that's fine, they want their even some of the ones who are stuck overseas who are normally resident here to be given permanent residence, and I think that that's fine too. But we should stop the system of temporary migration unless it has a chance of transitioning to permanent residency. We should simply, if you require labour, then you pay the price that's required. You don't use a temporary visa in order to achieve it.
So from what I've seen is obviously, you know, the point systems that people have to get shitloads of points to be even eligible to apply for residency, and that's pending on God knows what. There's also another type of workers, and I've seen more of these lately, is workers who are tied to their employers. So they don't actually even have the freedom to work for whoever they want in New Zealand. And I've seen recently what the mass restructures in these companies is that when their employers stop employing them, they don't even have the right to stay in New Zealand anymore. When did that came about?
Well, that's been there for certainly the last couple of decades, right? So generally, if you're an essential, it's workers on essential skills visas. So generally, if you are to prove that you meet the criteria for the essential skills visa, you have to prove that the position and the job and the area that you're going to work, there is a shortage of that category of worker, and the employer has to prove that they tried to get a New Zealand worker to do the job but failed, and therefore they need the foreign worker. Now that means that the job is not just tied to the employer, but it's tied to the area. It might even be a suburb in Auckland, so it might not even be but it might be Gore, you know, or it might be Invercargill, or it might be KFC and Parapara, whatever. It's not just the employer, but the region.
You can't even go work for KFC Auckland.
The position, the company, everything's linked together. That's why they need the employer as part of it, because you can't have You can't have the area or the job or the position without the employer being connected. Now, that's another thing that must change for those who are stuck here now. Particularly the ones who are losing jobs, they've got to be able to change their employer. But I don't believe any worker should be bonded in that way. You might be able to sort of, you know, some general category of sort of job or whatever, but not bonded to particular employers. And I think in the current circumstances in New Zealand, it's better if everybody has the freedom to change their job and move their position, and everyone can start doing the jobs that they want to do, not the jobs they're bonded to do.
So does this bonded job, I've been watching a few documentaries on American slavery, and it really reminded me, it's almost like,
a precursor to slavery was actually bonded labour. So they used to, Irish people in particular, my forebears, were sometimes bonded for, say, 7 years including in going on some sort of colonial venture to go and work in Jamaica to grow, you know, on the rice sort of plantations in Jamaica. But connected to, and the initial often African labour that was sent to these parts of the world was initially bonded. Similar to the Irish labour, but when they introduced slavery, they did it as a way actually to divide the Irish bonded worker from the African bonded worker by making the situation of the African bonded worker that much worse.
I think your microphone fell somewhere, Mike. is this a step moving back towards slavery if they're bringing back bonded?
No, I don't think that that's acceptable. Capitalism, the reason slavery ended was because it ceased to be the sort of most profitable way of exploiting labour, actually. So they needed workers to compete with each other in the free market in the United States, and that was a better way for capitalism. So it was essentially a fight between the sort of the more sort of industrial capitalist north with the plantation labour in agriculture in the south, the capitalists in the north wanted to free the slaves in the south so that they could join the labour market and keep labour cheap, but as wage labour, not as slave labour, although you might also call it wage slavery, given they try and keep everybody at the lowest possible wage, you know, the lowest wages possible. And capitalism seems to have a desire only to pay the minimum that they get
the maximum they can get.
Yes.
Being Chinese, and I'm quite fortunate that I haven't actually personally experienced a huge amount of racism, but I have heard it over the years from people. Now, one thing that we've created that I think is an effect from what the government has created, this cheap labour from overseas, is those that are in New Zealand, there's a lot of hate, and this hate, I think, is partially caused by the government, but it's also caused by the ignorance of people. A lot of the time, I've found those workers that are being exploited were blamed for the, I don't know, unemployment issues.
Yes.
When in reality, it should be the system and the employer.
Absolutely agree, but you can sort of, not to excuse, but you've got to sort of understand its origins, I think. So, essentially, under capitalism, working people are in competition. We're in competition with other working people for jobs, for a place to live, the barest income, and that very competitive system, capitalist system, wage labour, is designed to keep us, keep the wages at the lowest level possible. We try to overcome that competition by forming unions, by forming political movements, by social movements, and so on. So we try to negotiate collectively with the boss in order to improve the situation, But our basic beginning existence is in this sort of competitive sort of situation. Now, to maintain that competitiveness, the system uses every division that exists, whether it's between men and women, indigenous and non-indigenous, migrant and non-migrant, gay and straight. They try and use every difference that exists to put one group at a disadvantage over another group, or to pretend they are giving one group a privilege over another group. And I think that that's, when people start to believe that, then they start to get it wrong. Then they start believing that, so they're sort of the young white boy living in a garage in West Auckland, who's, you know, is in a desperate situation, but he starts to believe that the Maori kid down the road is in a better position than him, and it's because of some treaty of Waitangi settlement, then he's making a huge mistake. Now, the way to overcome that is not just abstract anti-racist propaganda, but governments need to ensure that everyone has access to the basics of life. And that's the problem, I think, with the way governments in recent decades, including Labor governments, have failed, right? So everyone, for example, needs a right to housing.
For sure.
You know, so we're not competing, or don't feel we're competing for the access to the state house. So they set up a situation where social housing, or what I used to call state housing, is now essentially only available to the most impoverished sectors. It used to be available more broadly to all working people who need it. And so that's another way we need to overcome the competition, is by ensuring other things, jobs, housing, healthcare, education, you know, preschool education, aged care, and everything is a universal right and entitlement, not a privilege of one over the other, or a pretend privilege. Because in the end, the privileges that they say we've got are used to actually undermine our basic income and conditions. So they undermine us, they don't help us.
For sure. Like, I personally hate the whole decile system, but we'll talk about that. Hopefully we can get Mike's son into this podcast, who is a teacher, and he can explain some perspective on that. Now, Mike, you've mentioned this, I can't remember if you mentioned this in the podcast, but you definitely post up a blog on it a couple of days ago, is about employers not disclosing wages. Was it something like that? I saw it on our Facebook page. I didn't actually read it myself. But when this goes up, I will put the link of that to it.
Well,
someone posted up on our Unite Facebook page about employers. Here it is. Here's the post. It's rude to discuss your salary. No, it isn't. It's something companies made so they could pay someone less than others. And I think that is a good way that capitalists...
See, this is where I talk about solidarity. See, we've got people who treat their, you know, people if your co-worker, and you treat the salary with your co-worker as some sort of secret, then you're entirely dependent on your boss, and whether you have the grace or favour of the boss. So you're sucking up in order to get your improvements. You're sucking up. We don't have to. We shouldn't have to suck up. We do our job. We should get paid well. Everyone should get paid well. Everyone should get paid more or less the same, in my view. More or less, most people are doing worthwhile work. Everyone certainly deserves a living wage. Everyone deserves margins for skill and service. That's a right. Not something we're going to beg and think. And the only way we can collectively do that is if we're talking to each other, sharing our experiences, and not being, you know, not pretending that we've got some sort of secret together with the boss against the rest of the workers. No, reach out to your fellow workers in bonds of solidarity. Join a union. Improve things together.
And for sure. And you know, the reason I saw that and I want to bring it up is that it's a huge issue when it comes to migrant workers, because, you know, it's a lot of migrants I've noticed over the years have very little understanding of what their basic right is in New Zealand. especially Chinese, we got this mentality built into us. Not me personally, but a lot of the older generations, and even some of my generations, is that, oh, just buckle down, do your work, don't cause any troubles, because we are here as guests, which personally I absolutely hate that thought, because, you know, if you have a right to work, you are entitled to the same right as everyone else. So I think that quote, we can extend it out and say, hey, look, if we discuss basic conditions for workers and let everyone know, you don't have to be a resident or a citizen of this country to even receive the same right as everyone else, as we don't have, well, legally.
That's true, but in reality, it's social power that determines a lot as well, right? So that's what I'm saying. So legally, every migrant, whether they're a temporary migrant, whether they're whatever, legally they're entitled to exactly the same rights as everyone else, including, for example, the minimum wage. But when you're vulnerable, when you don't have permanent residence, when you're a temporary migrant and your visa is tied to a particular employer, when you're a student desperately trying to impress your boss so that you can get a job offer at the end of when you get your degree, when you're kept deliberately in a vulnerable position to make it easier for bosses to take advantage of you, then it's much more difficult for you to exercise your rights in solidarity. That is why we need to bring an end to the bondage and temporary migration systems, so that everybody who comes here on a longer term basis does have a clear pathway to residency. If we can't offer that to them, then we shouldn't lie to them and that it's a possibility, and we shouldn't be bringing them here in order to put pressure on the broader sort of wage system. Because if we weren't bringing this 350,000 people in here, the bosses in New Zealand would have to pay higher wages to attract the staff that they require. And if they're forced to do that, that's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. That's called competition. That's called the value of labour power getting paid its value. This is the value system that capitalism's promotes. If the market deems that that what they must pay, then this is what they should pay. And if they can't pay that, then maybe they need to look at another business to be part of. If these dairy farms in Southland cannot exist without minimum or less than minimum wage Filipino labour, then maybe they should look at doing something different, is in my view. And either they pay the wages that are required to attract labour to those farms, or they look for another way of making money.
One last thing before we wrap this up, Mike. I grew up in South Auckland, and I've heard this comment quite a lot over the years: is I can't find jobs yet. They're importing people from other countries. What's your thought on that?
The system needs expanding. One of the positives, if you like, or in the past, it's one of the positives of capitalism, was that it was.
It's positive
that it was
for capitalism.
It's actually a system that requires growth. You know, that the competition between them and the sort of, beating and taking it ultimately leads to a growth in the system, because they're all trying to conquer a bigger proportion of the market. They're trying to expand the market. They're trying to sell more goods. They're trying to take over each other. And in order to do that, they need labour. So that's true. And overall, the more labour you have, the more productive on a certain level, the more productive your society is. So even though labour is coming in, that doesn't necessarily mean there won't be people who will be unemployed, but the labour coming in will overall, I believe, grow the economy. So I don't think it necessarily diminishes the chance of other people getting work, but it certainly increases the competition for the price of labour. I think, you know, I don't think it diminishes necessarily the ability of people to find work in the economy overall. So there's a bit of a, you know, yes, there's a tension in that, but generally migration helps the economy grow, and generally that should give people sort of an opportunity to find work. But when whole industries become dependent on temporary migrant labour, then alarm bells need to go up.
I think that's a really good point. We'll definitely come back to migrant workers, because Unite Unions, we support migrant workers significantly. We even have a few organisers, including myself, who are migrants, and that is something that's very dear to our heart. Obviously, a significant amount of our members are migrants, and they are facing the issues that we've discussed today, and there is a lot of discriminations and borderline hate towards migrants at the moment, which is very disgusting to see in 21st century. So we'll definitely come back to that.
The final point I'd like to make is I think we need to, again, it's to do with the migrant workers who are here at the moment on temporary work visas, who don't have permanent residence. They need more support from the government than is currently being given for the crisis they are going through. So they need some forms of income support as well for those who lose their jobs. They need the ability to change employers so that they can find alternative work where that's available. And they need, especially for those who are normally resident here anyway, those ones we talk about have been here 10 or 12 years, who have kids been born, they need a fast track to residency so that they're status is regularised and they can get the rights of all other citizens as well, including access to welfare and support, other forms of support.
So are you saying Winston Peters' message to migrants is not the right message?
Winston Peters' message is a racist and divisive message, and my hope is that they do not get reach 5% in the election and Labour can form a government of the Greens with the Greens alone, although I'm not very trusting of the Labour Party on the migration issue. There might be a better chance
of Winston
gone for a more humane treatment. We hope. We can only hope.
Now, one little disclaimer I'm going to put in here is Unite Union is not affiliated with any political parties at this point, especially.
We're not affiliated with any, but I think
we do have our preference over some.
We certainly have a clear preference for the Greens and Labour in this election, I think. So,
but this doesn't.
Especially the Green Party new policy around income support is very positive for people, and if we can get rid of New Zealand First, that would be a bonus.
But by not being affiliated, it means we actually have the right, and we do criticise all political parties if they make a mistake. So don't take this as a message that we will support everything Labour.